Welcome to the Agency of the Month on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. This month's agency is the National Security Agency.
Welcome to the program. I'm Julia Ziegler. My guest today is Chris Inglis, Deputy Director of the National Security Agency. Welcome, sir.
It's a pleasure to be here. Thank you, Julie.
I wanted to start by asking you a little bit about the mission of NSA and how it has evolved over the years. So remind our listeners what the mission is today.
Well, there might be a general mystery in the public about what NSA does on a daily basis. It's actually been out there for quite some time, dating all the way back to our predecessor organizations in World War II. We're essentially the organization that for the last 70 years, we either break codes or make codes. It's, of course, much more complicated today. Our challenge of finding intelligence and giving that to policymakers or people who stand in harm's way in the nation's behalf, it's a tougher challenge today, but it's largely the same mission that we had all the way back in the middle of World War II when our predecessors broke the German Enigma Code and worked against the Japanese Purple Code and helped for purposes of winning that battle, save lives and shorten wars in the heat of what might have been called the Battle of the North Atlantic or the Battle of Midway. On the other side of our mission is also fairly straightforward, the making codes part, where we help defend our communications, whether it's the president's communications or those, again, who stand in harm's way. And we have a responsibility to understand how communications work, how we might make them such that you can with confidence communicate from one place to another and have every confidence that only the intended recipient would get that. The secret inside of that is the same as it's been for 70 years, which is we hire and sustain terrific people. You know, we need a brain trust of people who can outthink and outmaneuver the nation's adversaries in a place now called cyberspace.
So what is it that you're looking for? What kinds of people, then, is NSA searching for on a daily basis?
We will, of course, look for people who have those deep technical skills that you might immediately think of, whether that's mathematics, computer science. We need people who speak languages, esoteric, not commonly taught languages. We need people who understand cultures so that we can understand how perhaps to interpret the meaning of words we might hear or expressions we might come across. We need people who have extraordinary values, who understand the Constitution of the United States and ensure that NSA not simply accomplishes the end purpose of our mission, but we do it exactly the right way.
What do you think are the biggest misconceptions about NSA and what you do or don't do?
I think the first misconception probably is that we collect on a regular basis the communications of the American people, that we have a focus on a domestic agenda. We do not, of course. That's not in our charter. We are not allowed to do that. We understand that our responsibility, having taken an oath to the Constitution, is to fully reflect that Constitution, and that includes the defense of civil liberties, privacy, rights. We are therefore focused in the foreign domain. That's where we've done all of our work across the history of NSA. That's where we continue to do our work. Perhaps the second misconception is that we only hire people with deep technical skills. We need people in just about every capacity that you can think of. We need logisticians. We need human resource specialists. We need folks who understand how to sustain the careers of extraordinary people. How do you develop them, find them, nurture them? So just about any large corporation would find themselves in a similar situation. We need a diverse array of skills and people who have the values that are consistent with our corporation.
What do you see then as the next sphere or evolution of NSA, if there is one?
I think it's a straight line extension of where we are. The domain within which we work, we now call cyberspace. We might have called it the telecommunications arena 20 years ago. It's, of course, a much more complicated place, and it requires skills that are deeper and perhaps somewhat more technical than we might have had 20, 30 years ago. But I think the challenge is that it's moving faster, faster and faster. And what we have to do is to stay up with the operational practices that our adversaries might use in that place. We have to make sure that we continue to stay aware of the technology and that we keep those two consistent with each other and with the laws and the policies that govern our operations.
Every manager I know has a to-do list, and I'm wondering what is at the top of your short-term and your long-term to-do lists?
Well, that's a great question. Perhaps in this forum, I can't go into the specific details. I think what I would answer is that my to-do list is split into three different bins, probably not unlike most people that would be in a job like mine. I have to worry about current operations? Are we delivering the intelligence that the president, those who stand in harm's way need from us? Are we at the same time developing capabilities for the future? Are we staying abreast of the changing dynamics of what's happening in cyberspace? Are we aware of the emerging threats? Are we aware of technologies? Do we have people who have the skills necessary to go stride for stride with that change? That's the second thing that I would concern myself with, transformation. And the third thing would be refreshment, sustainment. Oftentimes that's refreshing technology or making sure that you've got buildings that are up to speed, you have sufficient parking. But more importantly, in a business like NSA's, we have to worry about whether we have continued to hire the right people, whether we're sustaining people through those careers, nurturing, developing leaders for present and future circumstances. So my to-do list across the continuum of what I have to do today and what I have to get done to ensure our success next year essentially cuts across those three bins.
One of the things that I spoke with Kathy Hudson about when she was in earlier was a lot of recruiting and retention issues at NSA. And one of the things that she said, and whether or not it's a challenge or just something that you have learned to deal with, is that a lot of NSA's employees are more on the younger side, and that so many people have been hired since 9/11. So I'm wondering from a leadership perspective, as you're looking at retirement numbers and things like that, how much does that concern you, and where are you finding the next leaders at NSA?
Yeah, that's a great question. If you'll allow me, I might go in a couple of different directions
sure.
in answering it. First, I would say with respect to hiring a much younger crowd of people than we might have enjoyed, say, in the 90s when we weren't hiring and the population demographics were getting very older very quickly. I would say that it is both a challenge and a wonderful opportunity. The challenge is appealing to the younger people who come in terms of the quickness of the pace, the availability of technology, the collaboration skills that they practice demand a certain set of technologies and practices that challenge us in all the right ways. And so that's a great challenge. And the opportunity is that they push us in the right direction, and they continue to be just like the people we've hired for the last 60 years. They come because they want to matter. They want to do something that's important enough to commit their skills, their hard-won skills, to something that's greater than themselves. And in that regard, some of the tried and true practices continue to serve us well, which is to give them work early on that allows them to make a personal difference, but to something bigger than themselves, to give them a diverse career opportunity. They may choose to do the same thing for 20, 30 years. They may choose to do 10 different things across those 20, 30 years. And we have enough diverse opportunities, and we work in enough places that we can offer any and all of that to our workforce. So once we get them in the door, we tend to have great success in sustaining them. Our attrition rates are very low. So knock on wood, I hope that we can continue that.
You're listening to Agency of the Month on Federal News Radio. Our guest today is Chris Inglis, Deputy Director of the National Security Agency.
Looking for innovative and creative solutions to unique national security challenges? Look no farther than Sage Management. Whether it's providing critical mission-related support to the U.S. Army, developing enterprise-wide architectures for the Air Force, working with cloud technologies, or defending national interests from cyber attack, Sage Management's mission is simple. Apply sound business management practices, proven engineering solutions, and expertise to solve complex national security challenges. Sage consultants provide full-spectrum, life-cycle support from concept, exploration, prototype, and system development to fielding and deployment. Sage experts have the know-how to get the job done on time and on budget, essential with today's tight budgets. Sage provides professional management, engineering, cybersecurity, software development, analysis, training, and modeling and simulation to both the federal and state government. Sage employees pride themselves on their integrity and professionalism in providing quality mission support to their clients. To find out more about Sage Management and career opportunities, visit sage-mgt.net. That's sage-mgt.net.
Welcome back to Agency of the Month on Federal News Radio. Our guest today is Chris Inglis, Deputy Director of the National Security Agency. Sir, before the break, we were talking a little bit about the types of people that NSA hires. And I wanted to ask you about leadership at the agency and how NSA cultivates leaders. So if you could talk a little bit about what makes a good leader, a good manager. I've heard you speak in the past about that there is a difference, perhaps, between management and leadership.
I think your question actually frames the answer very nicely. First, I would say that there is a distinction between doing well at a skill, say, like mathematics or engineering or a language analyst, and then aspiring to and becoming a good manager or a good leader. Those are three very different things. And so the first key to finding a good manager or a good leader is finding someone who has the skills to do that, not simply the demonstrated skills at what they were doing, but the skills to actually take on a different character of work as a manager or a leader, and that further that they aspire to do that. Assign somebody to be a manager or a leader who really doesn't want to do that, who won't thrive in doing that, and they'll prove you right. They will not thrive in doing that. The distinction, I think, between a manager and leader is that a manager takes hard problems, allocates the pieces of those hard problems across a group of people, and then ultimately manages the result by combining their separate efforts into a solution. But nobody is surprised that that was a problem that the manager took on, and not particularly surprised as to how the problem was decomposed. A leader comes in perhaps to the same room and says, there's something that we're not doing today that is appropriate or possible in ways that you might not have thought about. They essentially take influence from either the environment or from their people, and they form an idea, form an initiative that nobody would have thought about or nobody would have committed to, and therefore reframes, right, what is seen to be the appropriate and possible thing to do. At the National Security Agency, just like most organizations, we need all three. We need people who are comfortable in doing singular things, mathematics, computer science, language analysis, human resources, and they're delivering some results from that each and every day. We need people who aspire and are comfortable managing hard problems. And we need leaders, people who can essentially point to something that we wouldn't have thought about and take us to that further possibility and achieve the miraculous on behalf of the nation. Sometimes we get all three of those in the same person, and that's a good thing. But all three of those are important to nurture, and we try very hard to select people based upon our expectations, to train them, to mentor them, to nurture them, so that they might then succeed in serving our agency and our nation in those capacities.
Do you think you have a good balance right now between those different types of folks, between leaders and managers and, you know, the folks who are doing the day-to-day work?
I do. I think if you kind of look moment by moment, you'd find that you're out of balance in this and that. But broadly, strategically, I think that we're in the right place. I think some of the discussions you've had with some of NSA's leaders over the last month have been a deep look into what we do to train, nurture, develop our people along career tracks. Kathy Hudson and Deborah Benani, who's our chief of staff, have worked very hard to try to take management and leadership training, you know, out of a corner where perhaps we did it based upon ad hoc training and an expectation that people knew what we meant when we said management or leadership, and to put some structure and discipline, rigor, real resources against that. And I think we're seeing the benefit of that at this time.
As someone who has been in a leadership position for many, many years, I'm wondering what your best management or leadership tip would be for new managers coming in to NSA or any other government agency.
First, I think, is to get the culture right. I think the most powerful force on the planet is culture. That's true in an organization. It's true in a nation state. And to therefore concentrate not so much on the mechanics of what you do, but on the culture, the ethos. That's particularly true in an organization where you expect the individuals to make choices on behalf of the organization on a daily basis. They don't so much have a set of enumerated tasks that they undertake, but they have things that you want them to achieve, and you don't necessarily know exactly what the problem's going to look like when they encounter it or what the solution might be. And so you have to empower them. And to get that right in an organization like NSA, you have to get the culture right. So you need to work on that. Second is you need to take influence as a leader as much as you might wield it, right, to give everybody's voice a chance to make a difference. At NSA, one of our great secrets, well, it's not so much a secret, but one of our core principles is to array a diverse brain trust around a common problem and to give everybody a chance to speak to what they see and what perhaps they might see as the solution associated with whatever challenge we might have. And sure enough, somebody in the room is going to see something that nobody else could see. If they give voice to that, then everybody benefits from that, and that collective brain trust can outthink, outwit, outmaneuver any similar group of brain trusts on the planet, so long as you give them a full chance. Culture's, I think, the thing. Ultimately, in order to succeed as a leader, I think that you need to describe what your strategy is, what your values are, share that with the people that you would serve through your leadership, and give them a chance to then participate in the execution of that. I think that those are well-worn skills. I think you can learn those through experience and practice. You can get them out of training. One thing that I fundamentally believe is that anyone can lead so long as they have the aspiration to do so and they get some meaningful support and perhaps a little bit of training along the way.
We did a survey of federal employees back in January, and overall, the folks who responded to the survey told us that their morale is down at federal agencies for various reasons. And I'm wondering if you've seen that at NSA, and if so, how you handle it. If you haven't seen it, I'm sure perhaps in your past you've dealt with it, and I'm wondering what tips you would give folks for dealing with it.
I think broadly, I would say morale at NSA is good to excellent. I think there are always periods where a particular group of people might think that they're not as appreciated as they might be. Federal workers might fall into that population now where you read in the paper on a daily basis that there might be practices or scandals of one sort or another. I think they're very limited, and I think that they should not be taken to then indict or malign the efforts of the vast majority that shows up every day just trying to do the right thing. But it's hard not to hear those things and think that somebody might then ascribe those practices and behaviors to you. And NSA specifically, and I'm sure at a lot of other federal agencies, I would say that morale is high because the people who come know that they make a difference on a daily basis. And they don't need to read about that in the papers to know that they've made a particular contribution to the welfare of their nation. Our attrition rates show that our people are generally happy. Their attrition rates are very low. I think at the end of the day, we try to do all sorts of things to bear close in personal witness to the contributions that they make. That's important. And ultimately realize that the calculus of value isn't so much their salary or the great buildings or the swell parking. Those things are important. But what's more important still is that their work is respected and that they're given a chance to matter. More often than not, somebody shows up at a place like NSA not because they want to make a lot of money, not because they want their name in the papers, but because they want to make a difference. If you give them that chance, then you can keep their morale up and high.
Before we go to break, I did want to ask you a question about budgets. Agencies have been under tight budgets, and budgets are going to get even tighter. What kind of budget pressure are you experiencing currently? Where are you affected the most? How do you adapt to that?
Yeah, I think that the budget pressures are real. I think that they're appropriate. I think regardless of the times you might live in, there should always be pressure to ensure that you're getting every possible value out of every dollar that you spend. These dollars are hard won by the taxpayers who contribute those to the federal treasury. You need to make sure that whether you're feeling fat or thin, that you're making the best possible use of those dollars. In the last year and a half, we have begun to see across the federal government, a tailing off of the resources that the nation, is able to spend in our direction. So our budgets in the out years are down some, percentage at this point, and we have adjusted to that by first declaring what our priorities are. People are at the head of that list in terms of finding good people, sustaining good people, and what then perhaps we can take some economies and efficiencies in to essentially sustain the things that are most important. All the other things fall lower on that priority list. What none of us know at this point is how the nation will reconcile, right, our expenditures to our revenues. Clearly, there has to be some greater reconciliation. We know that we'll have to play our part, the National Security Agency, and as individual taxpayers, we may have to play our part. We're ready and willing to do that. Again, we'll focus on, the calculus as we know it, what dollars have we been given, for what purpose, and manage that accordingly. We get a large sum of money on an annual basis. We get a large group of people. We have a great brain trust at our disposal. We should be able to do something not simply interesting, but something significant on behalf of the nation. We think that that's our focus at this point.
We have to take a short break. You're listening to Agency of the Month on Federal News Radio. Our guest today is Chris Inglis, Deputy Director of the National Security Agency.
Looking for innovative and creative solutions to unique national security challenges? Look no farther than Sage Management. Whether it's providing critical mission-related support to the U.S. Army, developing enterprise-wide architectures for the Air Force, working with cloud technologies, or defending national interests from cyber attack, Sage Management's mission is simple. Apply sound business management practices, proven engineering solutions, and expertise to solve complex national security challenges. Sage Consultants provide full-spectrum, lifecycle support from concept, exploration, prototype, and system development to fielding and deployment. Sage experts have the know-how to get the job done on time and on budget, essential with today's tight budgets. Sage provides professional management, engineering, cybersecurity, software development, analysis, training, and modeling and simulation to both the federal and state government. Sage employees pride themselves on their integrity and professionalism in providing quality mission support to their clients. To find out more about Sage Management and career opportunities, visit sage-mgt.net. That's sage-mgt.net.
Welcome back to Agency of the Month on Federal News Radio. Our guest today is Chris Inglis, Deputy Director of the National Security Agency. You've risen through the ranks at NSA, and it's given you a chance to see the operation from many different perspectives. How has that helped or hurt you, and what's your leadership philosophy?
Oh, on the first question, I probably had, don't hold me to this, but probably a dozen very different responsibilities across my 26 years at NSA. The one I'm in now, I've done for the longest bit, but up until that, it was a pretty traditional NSA military career where every 2 or 3 years you'd get a different opportunity, either greater responsibility or a significantly different thing to do. That has all been extraordinarily valuable in so much as it's helped me understand all the facets of our operations and understand all the particular personalities, all the particular organizations that you might come into contact with. Because my job at this point is to make sense of the whole and to create a coherent combination of all the resources, all the organizations, all the authorities that we bring to bear. And familiarity is important in that regard. And something approaching empathy is important to understand what the challenges are as seen through the eyes of the people who live in all those different places. If I have a leadership philosophy, it begins with it's a fact that it's the whole that wins, not the sum of the parts. Right? You need to first think through what is the collective responsibility or obligation of the organization of merit. In my present capacity, I then think about, you know, what is NSA's role and responsibility, and more broadly, what is its role within the larger intelligence community or the Department of Defense? If you can think strategically about what you need to achieve as that group of people or that group of organizations, you can then begin to then allocate or parse that into what are the singular contributions that each of the pieces might make. It's a responsibility of a leader to ensure that you not only have an understanding of that, but that your people have an understanding of that and that they get to influence your understanding of that. If you can keep that going, then people then can be empowered to make all sorts of thoughtful choices in places that you'll never see and about problems that you'll never witness because they solve them. They solve them before they become a problem that bubbles up to you. And so getting that right, I think, is the fundamental responsibility of a leader. And sometimes I have to be humble enough to know that I'm not the smartest guy in the room. Actually, that happens quite often. But, you know, that then is an empowering realization for everybody else in the room because they know that that's their moment, not simply to have an opportunity to speak, but the need to speak because they can lead the organization out of that particular situation.
As you said, you've been in this position is the one that you've been in for the longest. What does the future hold for you?
That's a great question. I don't know. I would say that, at the National Security Agency, which essentially is comprised of career civil servants, this job for me is kind of the end of a long career where, you know, I've looked for greater responsibility, greater opportunity at various places inside the National Security Agency. This is probably, that job that I would have sought out many years ago as, you know, the best opportunity to make a full and fair contribution. What lies beyond this at the National Security Agency, is therefore uncharted territory. But I would say that, General Alexander, my boss, and I are hopefully a matched pair, and we will serve for some while longer. And then what comes after that, will be another matched pair. And so the kind of future in that regard will play out naturally as it does over the next year, two, or three. I have no concerns, no worries. One of the kind of rules of thumb that I give people when they think about their next opportunity is don't worry so much about the specifics, but rather about the attributes. Is the job fulfilling, fun, interesting, such that you get up in the morning and go do it? is there an after? Is there something that lies beyond that? This experience is good for something. And you get to work with around four interesting people. That's been true throughout my career at NSA. I'm sure it'll be true about the next job that I get.
Well, I think that that is a great place to end. I want to thank Chris Inglis, Deputy Director of the National Security Agency, for joining us today. You're listening to Agency of the Month on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM.
If you missed any part of this program, you can hear it in its entirety on our website, federalnewsradio.com. Search Agency of the Month. Agency of the Month, Wednesday mornings at 11 a.m., only on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM, WFED, your source for federal news now.